Hello, everyone. Welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And this is Ty.
Danielle's with us this week. Hello, Danielle.
Hi, guys. Very good. Excited to be here. I'm really excited about this album.
That album,
wow,
of course.
So excited.
That album, of course, being Korn's Issues. I have no idea what to expect from Danielle in this episode of According to a Non-Metalhead.
So, According to a Non-Metalhead is an episode type where Danielle is our resident non-metalhead, meaning she does not listen to metal on the reg, although she definitely listens to metal more because this is like, I don't know, we've done this quite a few times, let's put it that way. So how this works is I'm the moderator, even though I am a biased moderator, I'm still the moderator. And Danielle states her opinion. We're going to go through each track on Korn's Issues album individually. Danielle will say what she thinks about the track. Michael will say what he thinks about the track. Michael, of course, is a metalhead. He's the co-host of this podcast. Shouldn't have to say it, but
hello.
Just so you know, that's how the formula works. So we're going to get both perspectives. We're going to get that outside perspective, and we're going to get that insider perspective. And I'm going to moderate and add what I can for commentary, which is usually the disagreement part of it. And let's see. What else can I say? This isn't an episode in which we're going to discuss the album in terms of like, this is what it went into making it. This is blah, blah, blah. It's not like a behind the music or, you know, informative podcast in that way. It's more about what does an outsider who's never listened to this album think of it, especially an outsider who doesn't listen to metal on the reg, and then what compare that to a metalhead. And, you know, mesh those ideas, and it's a lot of fun. So looking forward to it. Before we get into it, I just want to plug our stuff. Our website's www.supermetalworld.com. You can find blogs. You can find other podcast episodes. Lately, we've been featuring a lot of independent metal bands that have released some sick albums. And we're going to have...
throwing it out there.
Yeah, we're going to have more coming your way, too. I'm kind of being more active as a metal reviewer, so that's cool, I guess. I feel like there's a certain stigma that comes with being a metal reviewer, so I don't want to too much embrace that. I'm a guy who really enjoys metal, and I write about people's albums, and I review it. So
avoid,
I guess that makes
the
me
elitism.
I guess that makes me a metal reviewer, but I'm not like angry metal guy. You know, let's just hate everything. That being said, hope you come on the podcast. still waiting on that response. You know, you said you would, waiting for you on Twitter. So, let's set that up. And I would really love to see what you think about your review process. Anyway, that being said, we have that website. You can find us on all social media. Search Super Metal World. Give us a like. Give us a follow. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We have a email supermetalworld@gmail.com. Send us your album, a single, whatever. If we like it enough, we'll feature it in some way, shape, or form, and I may review it if it's a new release or, you know, has been released this year at some point. I will review it if that is what you wish. We're on anywhere that you stream a podcast, iTunes, Spotify. Follow, subscribe, share with a friend, rate and review. Really helps the podcast. Let us know what you think of these episodes. I know this is kind of a favorite episode type. We would love to hear what you guys would, you know, critique us about According to a Non-Metalhead. What can we do better? What are we doing well? That being said, guys, let's get into Korn's Issues. Horns high.
Horns high.
Before we get into the track-by-track analysis of Korn's Issues, I'm going to give you some facts about the album, just for a little context, won't bore you with it. It was released November 16th, 1999. Despite being like 16 tracks long, it's actually 53 minutes and 16 seconds, so it's under an hour, and that's to do with a lot of like interludes and just shorter tracks, I guess. The label is Immortal, Epic. This album went 3 times platinum. It's the second only to Follow the Leader. Follow the Leader was the album before this one, and that went 5 times platinum.
Wow.
In the United States. So some sources say that Issues has actually sold between 10 to 13 million units worldwide. So
not bad.
Very popular album. And it was interesting because this kind of came, it's really well regarded now. And a lot of Korn fans list this as their favorite album. It's my favorite album, but this was actually viewed as Korn taking a chance on their music, because the albums prior to this had kind of more hip hop influences. And this album kind of ditches the hip hop influence. And it's still nu metal, of course, which I'll get into what that is in a second. But it was definitely Korn taking a chance. So it was somewhat mixed reviews on release, but many list this as their favorite album, as I said. Kind of an underappreciated masterpiece. And this is, from what I found through a lot of like Reddit research, I just, you know, combed the Reddit forums, the Korn subreddit, many list this as their favorite album. So many of the super fan, cool, you know, I'm putting that in quotes, cool Korn fans, the Korn devotees, they list this as their favorite. It tops a lot of lists. So the personnel for this album, Jonathan Davis, he does the vocals, the bagpipes, additional drums, programming, whatever that means. Fieldy, he's the bassist, and he also does programming. Monkey, he's one of the guitarists, and Head is another one of the guitarists. And then you have David Silveira, who does drums and percussion. So that being said, before we get into the track by track, I do want to say one other thing, because we are taking a hard turn for metal here, okay? Everything leading up, and I'm talking about the other, according to a non-metalheads, everything leading up to this kind of felt like a natural progression for metal.
Yeah.
This was a hard fucking left, nu metal. And although this isn't Korn's first album released, this is still like in the time when like nu metal was selling as big as pop bands. Like Korn was as big as a pop band at this time. So here's a little nu metal 101. It's a subgenre of alternative metal that combines elements of heavy metal music with elements of other music genres such as hip-hop, alternative rock, funk, industrial, and grunge, and many others. Literally any other genre.
Yeah, it's a bit of a grab bag.
So, nu metal rarely features guitar solos. The genre is heavily syncopated and based on guitar riffs. Many nu metal guitarists use 7-string guitars that are down-tuned to play a heavier sound. DJs are occasionally featured in nu metal to provide instrumentation, such as sampling, turntable scratching, and electronic backgrounds or ambiance. Vocal styles in nu metal include singing, rapping, screaming, and growling. Nu metal is one of the key genres of the new wave of American heavy metal, which I don't agree with, but I guess Wikipedia does agree with that. I think it's a precursor to the new wave of American heavy metal, but
builds it.
That's debatable. Yeah. Nu metal became popular in the late 90s with bands and artists such as Korn, who we're talking about today, Limp Bizkit, and Kid Rock, all releasing albums that sold millions of copies. Nu metal's popularity continued during the early 2000s with bands such as Papa Roach, Stained, and POD, all selling multi-platinum albums, and came to a peak with Linkin Park's Diamond motherfucking selling in the United States. That's just the United States.
Wait, what's Diamond? Is like 10
million? That's 10 million.
Damn.
Hybrid Theory.
Such a good album.
It's a very good album.
However, all good things must come to an end. In the mid-2000s, the oversaturation of bands combined with the underperformance of a number of high-profile releases led to nu metal's decline, leading to the rise of metalcore and that is what I consider to be the start of the new wave of American heavy metal. And many nu metal bands disbanded or abandoned their established sound in favor of other genres. This is when Korn released their See You on the Other Side, which is definitely not nu metal at all, in my opinion. It's very of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the album with Late, I'm coming undone, I'm late. Nah. Anyway, you know the one. So anyway, let's get into it, guys. I got other interesting factoids that I will just sprinkle throughout this podcast like a little Keebler elf sprinkling little things on cookies.
What?
Whatever. You get it. Keebler elves. They're magical little beings that make really good cookies. Mm-hmm. Dead is the first track. Yes. If there was a cricket's chirping sound effect, this is where we would play it. The track list. Okay, so we got Dead, which is the intro, technically the lead track off this album. It's a minute and 12. It leads into Falling Away From Me. So we're going to start with those two. Danielle, I'll let you take it away.
Yay. So I have to take a second just to linger on Dead, because Dead is my favorite song on this album. It is so fun, which is not something that you expect with a song title Dead. I think I've always found it very, I've always really liked people that play with the death imagery and with dark images to a happy tune. The juxtaposition of talking about sad, heavy things to a beat that's really memorable and makes you feel good is a very interesting dynamic and tension, and I've always really enjoyed that. A great example is almost all of the Black Parade album by My Chemical Romance, where Gerard Way, that entire album, is struggling with coming to terms with death, basically, and what that next phase of life would look like, and sort of embracing the process of death and not being afraid of it. So I got nods to that in this song. The bagpipes are amazing, and it's just a really happy song. But it's also a great introduction to the album. I think it's a wonderful segue into the next song, which is Falling Away From Me. But I just wanted to touch on that on Dead first, because that is my favorite song on this album. I don't think any song emotionally affected me the way this one did. This was also my first introduction to Korn, except for that song that Ty was singing a few seconds ago. He sent that to me the other day and was like, I'm sure you've heard this before. And I was like, oh yeah, I have heard that.
It was released during our era.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not a song that I remembered listening to, because it just, I guess, just faded for me. But anyway, so really loved Dead. And I really like the line, all I want in life is to be happy. I think everybody can relate to that, you know? So that was a really enjoyable song for me.
That was your favorite song?
Yeah. Yeah.
The minute and 12 song.
Yeah.
Michael, before she gets into Falling Away From Me, I got to hear your thoughts.
I mean, I didn't really take much out of this song. I mean, it was a good, like, instrumental, good intro. I think it set the tone well for the song in terms of like the themes of the album that we're mm-hmm. going to see going forward. Like Danielle was talking about, like the imagery of death, despite the fact that it's like a happy song, is very like confusing in a lot of ways. And I think it just does a good job setting the tone for the rest of the song, or the rest of the album, which is in general very dark.
A very good lead into Falling Away From Me.
Yeah. And like just the bagpipes, of course, Jonathan Davis.
Yeah,
on bagpipes, like no one can do what he does.
Yes.
But Michael, before we get into this further, too, you should, because I know Korn, you really like Korn. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I don't think I surprised you by picking this one, but what's your relationship with Issues? What's your relationship with Korn? Just to sort of give you cred.
Yeah, for sure. I think Issues is, it's difficult for me to separate See You on the Other Side as like my de facto Korn album when I think about it, because that's what I started with, right? It's what I mm-hmm. grew up with in Korn. And I think that was 2005 it was released with. And Issues mm-hmm. was always there for me. Like, it was always a good album, and I enjoyed listening to it when I did. But I never really liked it as much as I liked their self-titled debut or Follow the Leader, or See You on the Other Side. But like, obviously there's like a ton of good tracks, and the number of times I've listened to that, this album over the last like week, has really made me appreciate how actually like deep this album is in terms of its quality.
For sure.
Good to know. Cause I knew this wasn't your favorite. So, but also I know that you're an appreciator of Korn. So anyway, sorry, Danielle, go ahead with Falling Away From Me.
Yeah, this is a wonderful song. This is one of my top songs as well. It was really nice to have two songs that just really hit home for me back to back and just really did it for me. This song is incredibly melodic and just captivating. Has like a lullaby effect to it at parts, especially that that bridge section where the harmonies are super tight. This album is just so melodic in general. The music and the melodies that they choose are just so interesting. Every song is ear candy in its own way, and every song offers something new. You don't get a lot of songs that feel like they're like any other song on the album. Even the interludes all are so unique, and I really appreciated that. But yet that doesn't make it not feel cohesive. It still feels cohesive. It just feels very unique. Like every song stands out in its own way. I think the subject matter of this song is very interesting as well. Sort of that mentality of no one can stand against the current of time, that time has its way with us, whether we like it or not. And this person sort of struggling with these thoughts of why me, why did this happen to me? Why are bad things happening to me? When is this going to let up? And feeling like you constantly have doors slammed in your face. And the battle that is life. I really like toying with that subject matter of just how hard it is to be a human sometimes and how painful and the journey that we all have to go through. The riff throughout is so good. And there was some familiarity to that riff for me. I don't know if this is a popular Korn song or if I would have heard this somewhere before. Or, I don't know, Ty, if you've played this around me before. I don't know how much Korn you listen to in your life. But anyway, this riff sounded familiar to me. It's also a really good riff and super memorable. So I might have just liked it and been like, oh, that sounds familiar. But really, I just enjoyed it. I have no idea. The intro is a hard juxtaposition from Dead, and yet they really feel like they belong together. And that happens a lot on this album, where a song doesn't necessarily sound like the preceding interlude or even the outro of the previous song, and yet you couldn't imagine them not being together. It just makes sense for them to flow one into the other, whether it's the lyrics that sort of match or even just like songs that have like a record scratch that goes from one into the other or something like that. They all just sound like they belong together. The placement of these songs was really well done. I think I'm going to offend people by saying this, and I hope I don't, but parts of his singing and the effects of the vocals, with like some of the low talking and the sometimes singing that sounds more like talking, it doesn't sound like singing, was giving me like some Marilyn Manson vibes sometimes. I would just get like, hear like heart-shaped glasses, or, you know, like I would just get nods to Marilyn Manson while listening to it. Just sometimes, not all the time.
I could definitely see there being like shared influence, without a doubt.
Yes.
I don't think you're going to offend anyone by saying that.
Okay, well, that's
Good.
I don't know how
I don't think you would.
I don't know how he stands.
I don't think he has like a, I don't think it's very controversial, you know, like, I think Marilyn Manson just is, but he's by no means, I mean, Korn is way more popular than him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
In the metal community.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. I just don't want to get anybody mad at me out the gate, but I mean, I'm a metalhead.
just to kind of tie this in, while you were talking about it, Marilyn Manson released his first album in 1994, as did Korn. So, I mean, Korn is much more influential than Marilyn Manson, but that's not to discredit Marilyn. He's released some music that I really have enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. He's certainly notable. I just didn't know if he was kind of like you know, the ugly stepsister of the of something. No. Okay.
I would more so filter him with Rob Zombie. I think their music is more similar.
Okay. Yeah.
So
interesting. Okay. I would just say my last note is that in this song, the syncopation, especially in Falling Away From Me, the way that he sings it differently every other line, the syncopation in general on this album is so like it baffles me that people can sit down and go, no, what we're going to do is we're going to wait to say from me. But then the next time we're just going to say from me, like
the fact that away from me.
Yeah. The fact that people can even like be like, no, we're going to play with them and we're going to mix it up. But really this is just a background part anyway. So like the layers of brilliance that have to be stacked on top of each other to make something like this is really just wonderful. I'm sorry I talked for 15 minutes, but I really like this song. Go ahead, Michael.
No, it's all good. When you were talking about you thought you had heard this song before, it felt familiar. It's probably because it is. I would say this is Korn's most popular song. Like maybe minus Coming Undone.
Yeah,
right. At least from like their early, like their first phase, the first iteration of Korn. Before their guitarist had left, like this has got to be their most popular song.
I would say it's this and Freakin' on a Leash.
Yeah, yep.
I would say those two are the ones that people are going to recognize.
And Freak on a Leash is just weird enough where it's like not, you know, it's not niche. Nearly as like melodic and stuff as this song. I think the song is easier.
This is radio accessible.
Yeah.
Not that Freak on a Leash wasn't on the radio, but this is streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't want to stay on Falling Away from Me for too long, just simply because it is such a well-known song. But
mm-hmm.
It's popular for a good reason, right? It's easy to sing. It's got the main catchy lead that opens the song up. It's got a killer breakdown that kind of builds with Davis kind of almost like descending into chaos and madness.
Yes.
And there's something special. I mean, obviously anyone who listens to it knows it, but there's, you know, just really something special about Davis's delivery on vocals and mm-hmm. a lot of interesting stuff with Korn. Korn was one of those bands that like I had always had such a hard time like categorizing, and I guess that's like new metal in general.
And
I don't even like to consider Korn new metal because it's they're so outrageously unique that
I think that's the crux of nu metal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. It's
because
it's like
because it draws so many influences. Each band, it's hard because Kid Rock doesn't sound like Limp Bizkit, and Limp Bizkit doesn't sound like Korn, and Korn doesn't sound like Slipknot. You know, all those bands get lumped in as nu metal.
You're right. Right. Yeah. And maybe so, that's just the nature of nu metal.
None of them really sound like each other. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, maybe that's like the how to categorize bands that you can't really categorize. Just throw them in nu metal.
They've got like weird influences, so it's nu metal. Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird thing about nu metal, but yeah. Overall, Falling Away From Me, great song. Of course, I mean it's got to be like I feel like an ass for not saying it's one of my favorite on the album, right? Because it's just a great song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess my quick notes to this is. This was the first album that I ever received or listened to from Korn. So it holds a special place for me, as does See You on the Other Side, because as Michael noted, that came out when Michael and I were in high school. And that's always special.
Yeah.
And not only that, but See You on the Other Side, I think is an excellent album. Start to finish.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
So great song. Falling Away From Me is probably one of the greatest metal songs ever written. And for those who don't think Korn is metal, you're just wrong. I mean, I'll debate it with you, but like they're metal. They're certainly not rock and roll. Right. You know, they're not AC/DC, you know, they're not even Guns N' Roses. It's not like they share more with metal than mm-hmm. they do. I get that they're hard to categorize, but their vibe, the underdog mentality, the carnival freak showness of their sound, that's metal to me. So mm-hmm. yeah. I know people think, well, then Korn isn't metal. Yeah, well, think what you want, but enjoy but yourself but, some but falling away from it. Yeah, you're wrong as fuck. When Issues was first released, it sold nearly 600,000 copies in its first 6 days, and it went to number one on the Billboard 200. It prevented Dr. Dre's 2001. That's got a lot of great tracks on it, by the way. And Celine Dion's All the Way, A Decade of Song, from taking number one. So Korn beat Dr. Dre and Celine Dion. That's pretty impressive.
Get out my house. Also, that's a Celine, that's a greatest hits. You're telling me Celine Dion's going to hit a greatest hits number one? That's crazy.
That would be insane, but I mean,
she's got some good hits.
People like her.
Yeah.
And then also, Falling Away From Me was so popular that it often dominated MTV's Total Request Live back when that was a relevant thing.
Gosh, I love TRL so much.
Yeah. All right. Without further ado, trash. Speaking of trash, Michael. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey. Wow, I'm out. I'm done with this shit.
Michael's only time getting mad ever in his life is right now.
So trash starts with I think this is a common theme on the album, starting with like a subdued verse that builds into a pre-chorus and then kind of explodes into a chorus, and you've got these low-key subdued instrumentals with this whispered creepy vocal delivery and like this dope ass bass line going on in the background. Love every minute of that.
But I bet you did.
Listening to the vocals, it's like, oh, this song is going into a weird direction. And it's I think in general just about Davis like using the women that throw themselves at him because he's a famous rock star, and then just, you know, basically throwing them out because he just doesn't want to deal with it, and it's not his fault. He just can't help himself, I guess. Those were the kind of the themes I was getting from the song. However, like that pre-chorus in this song is one of my favorite moments on this entire album, where it's
so good.
Where he's talking, he's like, "I tell my lies and I despise every second I'm with you." Like that,
and then the riff after that.
Oh God, it's like the building and building and building in the song, mm-hmm. and the way like these creepy verses slam into that pre-chorus that I was just talking about, and then it explodes into this wide open, really like massive chorus with these held out chords. And I think there's almost like these synth keys off in the distance, like providing like a layer of like even more ambience.
It's like a pad.
It's just wild. There's an impressive amount of layering in this song, and for me, I love the song from its like musicianship's perspective. Like, it's just a very, very well written song. It's got a really nice ebb and flow with these subdued verses that build and build into the chorus, and then just immediately drop back into following verses. Great song. Definitely one of my favorites from the album.
I'm so glad you explained what you thought the song was about, because I literally in my notes was like, is this song about a pedophile or a cannibal?
Well, when he's talking about, yeah, like there's in the beginning of the, in the first verse, he talks about these little girls, they make me feel so goddamn exhilarated. I fill them up. I can't give it up. The pain I'm just erasing. I don't know if little girls is supposed to be like actually like children.
I don't think so. I think maybe he put that in there to like, you know how sometimes I think lyricists do that to make you think about different things this song could be about. You know what I mean? So him instead of and maybe it fit the rhyming scheme, right? Or the flow.
Yeah it totally. If, and like, it's creepier and it just works, you know.
Right. But yeah, because like that's Michael's interpretation. And then also my interpretation was that he at one point in his life was a sex addict. And this was, you know, he says the pain that I'm erasing, you know, he thought he was erasing his pain by having sex with these women that he didn't care about, you know, but they're they get attached to him. But he's like, I don't care.
Yeah, I think I hear what you're saying as far as like trying to say one thing and then toying with the bigger idea. I think tiptoeing the pedophile line is tricky. I think little girl just automatically puts pictures into your head that probably shouldn't be there. At least for me, I don't love that. And honestly, that made it hard for me to come back to this song.
I mean, personally, I it didn't put those pictures in my head. I thought he was referring maybe to their stature.
Okay.
Like they were thinner women.
Yeah. Well, if that was, I mean, even that lyric in and of itself would probably bother me just, you know, inside myself. But then there's the, your feelings, I can't help but rape them, which is also incredibly strong. It's really strong imagery. There's just lots of creepy, I think, triggering things that just made it hard for me to go back to the song a ton. But the chorus is so good. The pre-chorus is great. The chorus is so good. The lyrics are incredibly strong. These are certainly really strong lyrics. Probably some of the strongest, like, come out swinging lyrics on this album. The bass is so hot in this song, and it comes through so sharp. And I knew Michael was going to be so excited about that. There's a lot of bass on this album. And I was like, Michael is living his best because there's so much bass happening in this album. There's a grandiose feel to the chorus. It feels very theatrical. It feels very larger than life. And they do that quite a few times on this album where you feel like it belongs in a creepy musical, like Tim Burton, Danny Elfman kind of style. It's very interesting music. It's really they're incredibly talented musicians, and they definitely are giving you a lot to ponder over. So this isn't one of my favorites. I didn't go back to it as much as I did others, but I think there's a lot of ear candy here for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think this song was meant to be shocking, and I think it's telling a truth, and he's not holding back about that truth. He's being 100% honest, like it or love it, about what's going on. And I think, not that I, like, condone what he's doing, but he's telling about his experiences almost like he would tell a therapist. He's saying, you know, he's being honest, he's being real, he's not sugarcoating it. And I think there's something special about that. And it's not like he's saying, like, go out and do this. I think he's saying, this is how I am right now. You know, this is who I am and how I am and how I'm thinking. So this song is definitely one of Korn's best. It's going to show up on their greatest hits albums. It has shown up on their greatest hits albums. So it certainly is a favorite. I do understand your feelings there, Danielle. So I did write ahead of time an alternate version of the chorus. So
okay, great.
Bear with
me. Can't wait.
It goes like this.
Dang.
Your feelings, I can't help but validate them. I'm blessed. I feel the same. My heart inside is full of your love. I'm thankful. I just keep you around.
Wow. Bravo, babe. That's great. That was really, really good.
That was
Michael hated it.
That would work well. That would just fit right in. It like yep. Lock and load it. Send it.
I swear, one day we're gonna make Ty's gonna make a cover album. Every time we do this episode, he ends up singing some song. Mm-hmm.
I hope we've got more. I hope we got more alternate.
It wouldn't be Ty if we didn't.
Well, here's the real song. The album featured four different covers, each designed by Korn fans as part of an MTV contest. The winning cover was designed by Alfredo Carlos. Another album cover for the special limited edition of the album features like cartoonish half-character images for the band members. There was also a fifth cover selected for the limited tour edition of the album. So this was actually it looks like a plush Korn man.
Yeah.
I know they have a name for that dude, but that was the winning that was drawn by a fan, put it that way. So
cool. That's actually really cool. Kudos.
Track number four is For You, minute 42, and then there's Beg For Me. So we're going to talk about those two. Danielle.
Yeah. Just to touch briefly on For You, I really liked this song as well. The interludes are just some really good songwriting and musicianship. The lyrics, you will never know what I do for you, what you are, help me through, I do it for you, I could have never lived if it wasn't for you, are wonderful lyrics. Very strong, romantic, and powerful lyrics. It's a great intermediate track, a really great intermission track. It almost feels like it belongs, if side A of a record ended, this feels like it would be the last song that would lead into side B, which I really liked. I think this song is a great example. Well, not a great example. I was sort of toying with this idea in my head anyway. And then when I came to For You, it sort of clicked in my brain that I don't think vocals, I'm going to try to say this the way I want to say it. I think, the music really drives this album. I think the vocals and the words are super important, but I think a lot of times in the mix, the instruments are hotter than the vocals. I think some of that has to do with the vocal effects they use, like the singing through a megaphone type thing, or like coming through a record player almost, or that sort of sound where the lyrics aren't as clear. Which I think is really cool because the lyrics just are really powerful. The lyrics and the vocals are still really powerful, but sometimes they're a little bit more subdued by the music, which I think is an interesting approach and also really good, in my opinion. I'm a really big lyrics and vocals person, but the music on this album is super strong. So musically, For You was a wonderful thing for me. Michael, do you have anything to add about For You specifically?
The only thing I wanted to add was there was like some weird contradictory lyrics that I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on.
Okay.
Where he was like, right at the end, you will never know what I've done for you, what you all put me through. But like what, like you don't say what you put me through if it wasn't a negative thing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But it's like, you have no idea what, you've done for me, or what you put me through, but I've done all these things for you, but it's still like a very like positive song in a lot of ways. I just found that contradiction a little strange.
I think the way I interpret the song is, again, well, for one, you can interpret a song however you want, and I think most lyricists would tell you that. I know James Hetfield of Metallica has said that many times. That's why he doesn't actually really explain what his songs are about, because he's like, interpret it how you want. And I think that's more powerful, personally. And that's something metal does a lot. That's why their lyrics are more cryptic sometimes, because they want it to be interpreted however the listener wants to interpret it to their life, which is great, because sometimes you hear songs from metal or even other genres that are like about one specific thing. And sometimes I'm like, I can't connect to this because I've never experienced that, you know? So anyway,
interesting.
Just want to throw that out there. That's a very real thing in metal. And this is coming from a metal reviewer. No, I'm kidding.
Be careful, buddy.
So I know my shit. But the way I interpret this song actually is he's speaking to kind of people that have maybe been doubters or put him through shit. And he's saying, this is for you. I can see all your faces, everybody that doubted me, you know. I couldn't have done this without you. So I think this is more like this is for the haters, you know?
Interesting.
So that's my interpretation. Also, just a couple quick notes. Jonathan Davis said his late wife, she passed away due to a drug overdose. She had the presence of heroin and a bunch of other drugs in her system, and it was ruled as accidental by medical examiners. Anyway, he mentioned this live one time that he got, I don't know if he got choked up or something like that, but that this was her favorite song. So she must have interpreted this romantically, but I mean, I don't see it. I mean, I see it both ways, but I'm just saying the way, you know, Michael, you brought up that put me through part. And that's, I think personally, that's what I think it's about, is the haters.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Oh, I guess I have to go into the next song. I was like, yes, go on. Beg for Me is track 5. A good song that I slept on, if I'm being completely honest. It really grew on me over time. It snuck up on me. There's just a lot of gold in this album. You're sifting through a lot of really good stuff. So some out of 16 tracks, and I include the interludes as tracks in all of them because those are really strong pieces of music. It's just hard to give everything the attention it deserves sometimes. So, but I'm glad this song sort of grew on me. The way I interpreted this song, and you guys can let me know what you think, was the relationship between the performer and the fans, or the artist and the...
That's how I interpreted it. Just
okay, cool.
Make that clear.
I think, you know, he says some days, you know, when you struggle with mental health issues, and mental health issues are abundant in this album, toying with the really hard things that happen inside your head that you don't want anybody to know about, or the voices that make you, that tell you to do things you don't want to do.
Which, I mean, the album's called Issues, so that totally makes sense.
Totally. I think, you know, he's even says in this song, there are like days where he doesn't even want to get out of bed. But he does, and he sort of lives off the energy that the people who love him and who support him give him. And I really like that he sort of clarifies that he doesn't want people pining over him or obsessing, but rather appreciating and establishing the relationship that's a back and forth between the person on the stage and the people on the floor. He longs for that, the narrator, the singer longs for that genuine connection. The snare intro was super dope. This is the first, like, to my memory, like, first song that really rests in the yell singing, like this, not scream, but like more the yelling type vocals. They go back and forth between three different voices or characters, or I don't know what you want to call them. You have the more yell singing vocals. You have the deep, soft spoken vocals that remind me of Marilyn Manson sometimes and have like Megadeth vibes and that low talking voice. And then you have the high pitched singing voice. I don't know what roles they play. I looked at that a lot, wasn't able to really differentiate, but you have these three different types of singing that are going on, just very experimental vocally. Honestly, that made it difficult for me sometimes to get my bearings in the song, trying to understand what like a character was trying to say, or I couldn't tell if he was just like playing around and when I wasn't supposed to read too much into it. So I struggled with that a little bit, but once I got used to it, I kind of just listened around it. He does this like slightly under the pitch singing, that's more of like yelling. And I think that's really interesting artistic choice to be a little bit under the pitch, just to really drive home what the song is saying. I imagine the song is super dope live. People probably love this song. They feel like it's about them and to them. And I love the repeated lyric, "Be there for me." I think that's something that everybody can relate to and what we all want. That's a very human thing, to just find somebody that you can trust and find a community of people that believe you and want to go through life with you and are there for you, you know? So this song really snuck up on me, took a while for me to appreciate for what it is, but I think it's a really strong song, and I think the placement of it is really wise on their part.
So this song, especially in the chorus, is so, I mean, they're really good. Korn is really good throughout this entire album at writing like really catchy stuff.
Yeah.
But like the way the when the chorus hits, and just like the groove set in time with the vocals and the like this really heavy guitar riff and all the drums, everything is just like really in time and just really. They hit
it's that syncopation.
Really, they really hit this sweet groove.
Yes, so groovy.
And something that like, and I kind of agree with you, Danielle, is like how much this song snuck up on me right away. Yeah. Right away, I like in my notes, my first round of notes were just kind of like, yeah, you know, it was decent. It had some nice catchy bits and stuff. But as I continue to listen, it was like, damn, like this song like hits really hard.
Yeah.
And for me, the alternating between these different voices in the verses, I thought was stellar. Loved all of that. I don't know that. Davis really has like necessarily, I don't know. He's just like really strange in his delivery. And I can't like, he doesn't necessarily have characters like Mustaine.
Yes. I was going to speak to this too. I think you're right. Yeah.
But he's just kind of like, oh, you know, it'd be cool if I said, I just can't get out of bed. There is evil in my head. Like really
in
strange.
In my head.
And then yeah. Everyone just let me be. Just shout that.
And maybe it's just like different moods too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like different
I guess,
voices for different moods.
I guess he's upset that everyone's looking at him and everyone's not letting him be, but
I don't think it's something
like,
that
it's like a release.
I don't think it's something that like you would overanalyze. I think it's just part of Jonathan Davis as a vocalist.
I would tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
But for me,
before you continue, Michael, I just got to say that Danielle was talking about this song, and it's actually only been played live. And this is according to that setlist.fm. Like they keep track of how many times songs have been played live. Mm-hmm. And they've actually only played this song 14 times live.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this is in. I bet the song would be super dope.
Yeah.
And they have played Falling Away From Me 1,290 times.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Play that like every show. For me the chorus is the key moment to the song, and is the real catch of the entire song, and kind of sums up what the song is all about with the goddamn, you'll say you'll get up for me, you're the crowd, come on, give it back to me. It's like that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
this doesn't necessarily have to do with the Issues album, but just an interesting fact about Jonathan Davis. He began in the early 2000s collecting serial killer art and memorabilia, publicly displaying selected items while on the Ozfest 2003 tour. But in 2005, he was considering starting a serial killer museum with some other dude, but pulled out of the deal and got sued for pulling out of the deal. The litigation was ultimately resolved. And anyway, later Davis denounced the items and got rid of all of them. I couldn't keep stuff like that personally.
Yeah. I'm a big serial killer studier. I am super into that stuff, researching them and all that. And like John Wayne Gacy was like making paintings in jail and stuff. And you're like, dude, that would be dope to own something like that simply because it's somebody who is such a figure and such a horrible person. But I feel like it's what we should do is research them and learn how to not behave. And I don't think I would want something like that either. As much as you research them and think they're interesting and how can the human mind get to that level? I don't think I could ever own anything from a serial killer. I think it would just disturb me too much.
Yeah. It would haunt me a little bit, just like knowing.
Seems like bad. Yeah. Bad luck.
Yeah.
So when, who was the guy who was painting that painting?
John Wayne Gacy.
So I'm sure John Wayne Gacy was thinking while he's painting that, what make me bad? And that's our next song. Make me bad.
God damn it. God damn it. Make me bad. I would just like to start to say that the intro and verse of this song feature a lot of what makes Korn so good. You've got this groovy ass guitar riff opening it up with the slapped bass line going on underneath. For the longest time, I was always when I was younger listening to it before I started playing bass, I was like, what's that sound? Why is there drum sound so weird? It's got this weird clank sound. I was like, nah, dude, that's the bass slapping it hard, I guess.
It's Baby Michael being drawn to the bass and you didn't even know it.
That's right. But then we move right into the verse with this the subdued verse again, kind of back in action with which I think is fairly unique instrumentation thus far on the album, maybe even the whole album in general, because there's this mm-hmm. kind of this eerie piano line that's being played. Really cool, really nice touch. Interesting use and unique use of that instrument on this album. And even sampled drums. I don't think that's an actual kit. So you've got this bass, this very electronic sounding drum kit and piano playing. With these subdued, but also a different delivery. It's almost just he's talking in a low mm-hmm. voice versus a weird, creepy whisper. He's just kind of talking.
Right.
And the most important thing for me, I think, to talk about with this song is at this location or at this spot in the album, as you're listening, the album progresses and you can really tell that Korn has this huge arsenal of ways to make really cool sounding music. From eerie vocals and instrumentals, you've got groovy bass lines, these funky guitar riffs with almost these record scratch sounds going on with the guitar. You've got these really catchy hooks and leads. You've got these slamming, really heavy riffs. I love it all. And I think it's just really cool. Just even song 6 or whatever this is in the album. You already know that, or you can already tell what this band is capable of in terms of being musicians.
Mm-hmm. And you're there's no way that they have more of that.
Right, right.
Because everything's been so different, but they just keep giving you new stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's wild, and it's all good too, right? I think the chorus in this song. I know I probably said this about trash or something, but is probably my the most catchy moment on this song.
Oh, it was getting stuck in my head all week.
I feel the reason as it's leaving me. No, not again. It's quite deceiving as I'm feeling the flesh make me bad. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really catchy chorus, and it's so easy to sing.
Oh yeah,
And every time it's on, it's like, turn that shit up because I want more of it. Make Me Bad is definitely one of my favorites on the album.
Yeah, Michael, I think you encompassed it really well. This is a song that the chorus is really the bright shining star of this song. And I'm finding that throughout the process, I am more drawn to songs, at least on this album, where the tone of the vocals is more consistent. I think because so far I've been trained in these metal albums we've done so far to have these different styles of singing mean something. And so I got a little bit fixated on that when I don't think I should have. I think I'm learning that now by talking this out with you guys, that sometimes I focus too much on why the tone was changing. I was like, well, what is he saying? Like, who is this? What character is this? And I don't think I was supposed to do that. So the songs that had more of the jumping between the styles of singing were harder for me because I spent so much time trying to figure them out. So that's just a little snippet of my weird brain for you. I feel like this song had a super 90s vibe to it. For me, I had like images of this song playing over like being a montage in a movie of a kid like becoming a rebel in high school and like having a cigarette for the first time and like coming to school with, like his hair slicked back and like a leather jacket, you know, where you have that like rebel vibe that this song would be really good for in a film. And there's a lot of songs as we go through that I will start saying that about, that I'm like, this belongs in this movie because it just made sense in my head. But yeah, this song is pretty good. I'd say it's mid-ranking for me. It's not my favorite or my least favorite, but I think it's good for what it is. And I agree with you, Michael, that the chorus is probably the strength of this song.
For those who think that Korn isn't a metal band, I just want to leave you with this anecdote. While Korn performed at the Download Festival in 2006, Davis was unable to perform, and he developed idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, ITP, a rare bleeding disorder. This left him bedridden for days after his band's performance. Assorted other artists, also at Download, filled in singing for Korn during the performance, including M. Shadows of Avenged Sevenfold, Matt Hafey of Trivium, Jesse Hassick of 10 Years, Benji Webb of Skindred, Corey Taylor of Slipknot. Anyway, what community is that when you hear all those names? That's the metal community, people. Boom. Korn's a metal band.
Boom.
Suck it. Case closed. Case closed. Wow. I got him. Case closed.
For those who
does
don't believe
Korn. Does that
make
me bad?
Oh, God.
So. The next couple of songs, for those of you listening at home, I've been making very bad Make Me Bad jokes in between.
Consistently.
In between the non-recorded parts. So the next one, a couple songs we're going to talk about is It's Gonna Go Away, which is another interlude type track coming in at about almost a minute 30. And then Wake Up, which is 4:07. Danielle, it's your turn. Yes.
It is my turn. Yeah, It's Gonna Go Away is a weird, weird song. So all I'm gonna say is that it's a nice reprieve in that it slows it down a bit. But the song is very strange. I would have no idea what the song was saying if I didn't have the lyrics in front of me. And I mean, overall on this album, there's some... the lyrics are pretty clear, like I can hear them. Sometimes the meaning of them gets a little lost for me, but I actually kind of dig that on this album a little bit. That's something that I think is very interesting, and these lyrics in general are very uniquely Korn. They are very, they have their fingerprints all over them, and nobody sounds like them and nobody writes like them. And so that's definitely a strength. But Wake Up is a really cool song. For some reason, I feel like Ty is going to love this song. Ty, do you like this song?
I love this album in general. So,
okay,
yeah, I like this song. Are you saying, like, is it my favorite?
Yeah.
No, but it's, I would say it's like a top 5 or 6.
Okay, cool. I don't know why. I think just like the drive of it. And it also kind of reminded me of Black Friday at parts. Good Morning, Black Friday. So I think I was just like, ooh, there's some things that remind me of that. So he's really going to like it. Anyway, this song is pretty tight. The dynamics are dope. The dynamics of not necessarily him singing in characters as much as he actually sings softer at parts and sings louder. Like, he does the dynamics with his own voice, which as a choir kid was like a big thing. Like, we're going to sing fortissimo now. We're going to sing mezzo piano. And all my choir nerds and music people are like with me right now. I really appreciate dynamic singing and adding some texture and layers there. And it's also really nice that this song felt a stripped down at parts. It's nice to have a song. I think I have a history with this podcast, these episodes so far, of a lot of songs going 100 miles per hour. And that was appropriate for that band, or that was appropriate for that album. But it's nice to have an album where things aren't going quite so quickly, where you can really bask in the beauty of each song as it stands. They have a lot of mid-tempo songs or songs that are faster but are not like 300 zillion BPMs. So I do like it when they slow things down a bit even more. They're just great. It's a great way to pace themselves. They're really good at pacing on this album. I think the midsection is the strength of this song. I think the dynamic singing is super cool. The end gets a little bit... isn't as strong for me as the middle section. That was the part that I kept getting drawn to and would rewind and listen to over again, because that part of the song is really dope. So this is another mid-ranking song for me, but I think this is definitely a dynamic song, which I really appreciated vocally.
Can I interject before Michael jumps in? What do you mean by dynamic? Because I feel like he's already been dynamic by throwing a lot at us. Maybe you just mean this in a choir sense.
I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
you're just like what it, okay.
Mm-hmm. Like just the way the style. He's actually singing. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Michael. Go ahead.
So right when you hear the song for the first time, you're immediately hit by this like really heavy riff. One of the heavier riffs on the album. And it kind of cuts into the intro is just Davis just screaming, "Wake the fuck up." Which is awesome. Like, really, really solid intro. And then it moves. We've got into this this lead echoing, this really groovy riff. Like, it's really cool from like all of the guitars, the instrumentation perspective. And then the main verses are they're sung more subdued, I guess. He's certainly not shouting "Wake the fuck up" during the verses. But there's this like really cool funky bass line with cool atmosphere in the guitars, lots of echo and delay and almost like I think there's like probably a lot of wah going on. Really interesting atmosphere, and then there's this wide open chorus again, like Danielle was talking about. Very like consistent singing in this song. But I think there's something about like, I feel like they were, when they wrote this chorus, they were trying to, you know, keep that, like that catchy chorus aspect that's been going on for the entire album.
Yeah.
But it just like really didn't land for me. Like, I'm very, very like meh about this song. Like, I think you take the song off the album, I don't think the album suffers.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's nothing inherently bad about it. Like, I think it's like a decent song, but in the context of this album, like, I don't really know. It just kind of falls a little short for me, and I don't know if it's. I think it's got to be the chorus. The chorus is like almost catchy enough, but it's just not there for me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that. You know, the more we talk about this, it is kind of like for one, it's about the band members fighting, mm-hmm. and they should wake the fuck up and stop fighting and remember why they play, in Korn. So I think the chorus ends up being a little bit cheesy and it
yeah.
isn't quite as catchy. You're right. It does kind of fall flat. Yeah. That being said, you guys be the judge. What do you think? Here it is. According to the band in the booklet that comes with the Greatest Hits Volume 1 album, they did not want to be part of a popular trend and wanted to do their own thing. Thus, the hip-hop elements of Follow the Leader were removed during this process in favor of a more alternative metal and industrial metal sound rather than that traditional nu metal. The band admits that with Brendan O'Brien working alongside him, I think he worked in some capacity on this album. He kept them more focused during recording so far as to not letting them just fool around and party. There was a lot less drinking. And, you know, Jonathan Davis, lead singer, quit drinking and doing any form of drugs earlier that year. And he's actually still sober.
Good for him
to this day. So this was a more focused album, but it's also, like I told you guys, Korn making a left turn and saying, you know, they had done like three very iconic nu metal albums and they're like, we're gonna shift away from that,
yeah,
and just do our own thing, set our own, you know, be our own trendsetters, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. The next couple songs we're going to talk about are Am I Going Crazy, another interlude, 1 minute, and Hey Daddy, 44, excuse me. Michael.
So Am I Going Crazy is, I don't know, I don't really have that much to say, except for you were talking about Brendan O'Brien, the producer, and I don't know how much of a like creative hand he had in the production of this album, but like, one really cool aspect about it, about Am I Going Crazy specifically, is like some of the lyrics, am I going crazy, am I going insane and dazed, am I too lost to face this, and what will it cost to escape? You can actually, that's all like in the right ear, the right channel, the right speaker, right? And in the left, you hear, it's like his vocals like repeated, but like either backwards or there's some like weird morphing effect going on.
Yeah.
So that's like a really cool aspect about this song, regarding going crazy, I guess. But mm-hmm. beyond that, not a ton to add.
Mm-hmm. It definitely serves as an interlude.
It does its job. Anyway, Hey Daddy. I think there's like absolutely stellar guitar work on this track. We start with like there's like this funky wah guitar womp 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 womp, womp like mm-hmm. doing all this weird shit, and then the other guitar, I don't know like Monkey and Head, like who's responsible for what sort of influence, like I'm assuming like one of them, probably Monkey, is doing those wahs, like those scratches, and then Head is responsible for like these more ambient leads, I guess, that are happening. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot mm-hmm. of atmosphere in the beginning of the song, and then this like cool funky bass line comes in. It's like, again, they just keep throwing new shit at you, like song after song. Like Like, I don't think we've experienced anything like this on this album yet.
Yep.
And I for me, I think the song has to be some sort of some lyrics that stuck out for me was in the bridge. They tell me that this thing inside of me wants to get out. All it does is scream and shout. I'm trying not to let them out. They tell me to hurt myself. They tell me to hurt myself. They tell me to hurt myself, but I'm not going to listen. I was trying to figure out like what's going on. Like, is it like these, you know, are there like demons like trying to take control over him? Like possibly it could be those demons being drugs. Cause I know he mentions demons directly in this album or this song, I believe. And also, who is Daddy?
I've kind of interpreted that as God.
Oh.
Okay,
I can see that.
And I thought he was talking about a drug addiction.
Okay.
And he's like, hey, Daddy, you know, hey, Father, because, you know, you'd God the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way I interpreted it. I'm not saying I'm right.
That's reasonable. So, yeah, again, they just keep throwing, like, brand new, unique takes at you. Like with the vocals, the way the vocals are delivered in the verses, he's like really in this like falsetto range where he's singing and it's really strange and it's new and it's something you haven't experienced before. And like, this is definitely not a song that I remember listening to. And I feel like it's not a super popular Korn song. Maybe I'm totally off base on that, but
I don't think it's one they, well, let me look at my live statistics.
Sure.
But while I'm looking at that, I just got to say that I fucking love this song.
Yeah. It's so personally. Good. It's one of my favorites on the album. It's so easy to come back to.
They played it live once.
Really? That's crazy. Would it ever be on like is this a greatest hits, eligible song, do you think? Like, I would say it is, but I don't know how other people feel about it.
Well, you keep talking, I'll look it up.
But again, actually, like, surprisingly, became a really good fan, really big fan of this song. I think there's a lot of stellar guitar work from both, both the seven string guitars and the bass. Really, really impressive, even in the vocal delivery, just a lot to really enjoy about this song. And the pre-chorus is intense.
Yep.
And it builds and builds and builds. Excellent song. Really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the greatest hits album, just saying.
Cool.
Okay.
I kind of, you know, went back and forth on these lyrics. For me, it almost felt like he has the voices in his head are almost have become inseparable from who he actually is. And he both relies on them and despises them and can't imagine being without them, but can't imagine living with them. You know, there's this juxtaposition. Yeah, there's this juxtaposition that's happening of I hate this thing and yet I am this thing. So I think the lyrical content was just crazy good in this song. It just really gets your wheels turning in your brain. Based on the title, thought the song was taking more of a sexual turn. Turns out was not the case at all. I was proven wrong there. But yeah, Michael, I think you summed it up really well. All I would add is, this song sounds like it belongs in the end credits of The Matrix. Just that, like, when he's like flying off, you know, and you see Neo like mid-fly, when he takes off from the phone booth and this like hard song starts playing, this belongs in The Matrix. Am I wrong? No, I'm not. That's all I have to say about that.
You know, I could see that, right? I think that the song that they play at the end of The Matrix is Wake Up by,
Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine, yeah. And the chorus, the main chorus riff is not dissimilar. It's definitely got that vibe.
Go me!
I just don't see it. No, I'm kidding. You fuck me up. I can't.
Okay, track 11 is called Somebody Someone, and this song is a banger. It is the, like, tribal-sounding drums that are happening, especially in the chorus, like, slap. They're so good. This song was one that I danced to around my apartment, and my cat was getting really mad at me, but that's a whole other conversation. Ty has lots of snaps of my cat, like, yawning in my face when I was trying to, like, get her to be interested in this album. Anyway.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Danielle's cat's name is Daisy, and mm-hmm. I think she's more into, like, really grindcore, like, hardcore. Like, she's into, like, Cannibal Corpse and,
yeah,
you know. Korn.
She's a Pig Destroyer fan.
Exactly. Those were the two I told Danielle. Pig Destroyer and Cannibal Corpse. She's like, yawn. This Korn bores me.
Yeah, she's like, this new metal stuff, yawn. I need, like, the real stuff, you know? Because she was, like, down with all the other stuff we were listening to. It's just this album, she's like, yawn fest.
Yeah, this isn't hard enough. And, you know, I could also see Daisy listening to Metalocalypse, which we got to have Danielle listen to at least one Metalocalypse.
Dude. Mermaid.
Is that a band? Fuck yeah. It's a band and it's a TV show.
It's the greatest 10 heaviest fucking band on the entire planet. Anyway, please continue.
I'm really scared. Anyway, so Daisy wasn't a fan of this song, but I was. And it has lots of ear candy. Like I said, the percussion, great. The intro, fantabulous. It is so dope. It's really sick and, like, also kind of subdued. Like, they just throw stuff at you that's, like, really, like, straight magic. But they kind of, like, do it at, like, a soft volume where they kind of let it, like, go underneath something. And you're like, no, that's really tight. Like, can we go back to that? They just have really good riffs. In general, the scream on Dying towards the middle of the song when the tempo changes and they do this really cool thing is, like, chill inducing. That is such a cool part of the song. And the breakdown was just, like, the breakdown is cool in and of itself, that you're like, oh my God, is that a breakdown I hear? But then they deconstruct the chorus inside the breakdown, which is, like, so tight. Loved that. The lines, I need somebody, someone, part of the chorus is probably my favorite line sung on this album. The lines, the lyrical content, plus the vocal delivery, plus where it falls in the song. It is so, and the notes they use, just the melody of it is so, it's so memorable. I literally sing those two lines in my head all the time. I've been singing them all day, all week. They're so memorable. It is, I think the best thing you can say about this song is it's just fun. And anybody who doesn't think it's fun is wrong, because this song is so fun. It is, like, just a blast to listen to. And I think this song would explode live. I could totally see this being, like, the battery of the set, where great you're reference. Like, yes, this song is, like, everybody's like, this song is a banger. Because it is. It's just a great song. And it's, I mean, there's so much to compete with on this album, so it's hard for me to rank them all after Dead, to be honest. But this song is just so good, so fun, was such a ride, and I went back to this song a million times because it's just really that good.
Yeah, this song starts with that, like, main verse lead, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and, like, then they play that for a little bit. It's, like, really kind of eerie, and then they play the pre-chorus mm-hmm. riff, and then they move right into the verse. You can immediately tell that like, the song is going places. And overall, I think the song is Davis's best performance on this entire album. Mm-hmm. I think he just nails it in every regard. There is, like, normal singing in this album, or normal singing in this song, like, in the verse, and then he kind of even kicks in some of that weird like half talk singing in the verses, and then of course the breakdown, he's just going for full gutturals there. Really love the way this song builds. Like, we've got this kind of eerie, really tension heavy verse. Like, there's so much tension in that little verse lead that's played that I talked about earlier, and then when the pre-chorus comes in, it's just a dun, 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 with these like heavy drums, you know, it's like things are building. And then it just slams in this really heavy, chorus.
It's almost doomy.
Doomy
notes, you know?
And just really, really love, honestly, like almost every aspect of the song I really enjoy. I think I do have one critique, and that's like not the very end breakdown where they go like halftime, where it's like where they kind of repeat the chorus lyrics in a like a halftime breakdown heavy moment to end the song. Mm-hmm. It's where like they almost like double time it, where it's like the guitar comes in as like a let me pull up the lyrics here. The section of the song where he's like, I look, I sign, I need someone inside to help me out with what I'm trying. I'm crying, I'm prying in a pile of shit. I'm dying. I'm dying. I'm dying. Like, I don't really know that the way that is kind of transitioned to feels like really abrupt in the song. And with how smooth the flow of this, the rest of the song from like verse, pre-chorus and chorus, it really felt out of place and removes me from the trance that the rest of the song puts me in. So if I'm going to have like one critique, it's, I think that bridge, at least the way it's transitioned to kind of like, is for me a detriment to the song, but overall, the song is very, very good.
Yeah. I can see that, Michael, for sure.
And on the flip side, some may find that is a nice little change of pace to purposely get you out of that trance. So yeah, there's definitely, I could see people taking both sides of that. Mm-hmm. This is one of their most popular songs without a doubt. It's a greatest hit song since I keep saying that. Korn only has really one greatest hits album, that I see. There might be like an essential Korn, but Korn has released like Korn Greatest Hits Volume 1. They don't have a Volume 2. And the songs off Issues on that are Trash, Somebody Someone, Make Me Bad, and Falling Away From Me.
Is the 12th track on this album, and it starts with this again, we're getting more like this funky lead work, I guess. It's like I don't know, Ty, do you have any idea what sort of effect is used at the beginning of this song? It's like wah sort of.
I think it's some kind of goofy wah type pedal. It could also be something similar to what Jack White uses. I forget what that pedal is called. But it like it's like an octaver or something. I don't know.
Okay,
like
a wah pedal that does like pitch shifting.
Yeah, that, it that sounds sort of something good. It's like it seems like a souped up wah pedal. Let's put way.
It's really, really interesting and neat effect to open, and we got this like cool bass line. Again, we've got another like subdued sort of mumbled verse. I don't think it's not necessarily sung, but it's. It's more mumbled, I guess, than anything, which is fine. Does its job. And it moves through, and I'll be honest with you, like I didn't really find this song overly interesting. I think if there's two songs on this album for me that were just a little flat, like that would definitely be No Way and Wake Up. I do think as this song builds, verse three specifically in the vocals is really interesting. The song builds into this more sung and open chorus. You've got like these harmonized vocals that are happening. And the vocals delivery in the third verse is different than the rest of the verses in that it's actually kind of sung as, you know, I guess the narrator is becoming more distressed in where he is in life, I guess. And it just builds and builds and builds, and there's a lot of tension and pressure in the song. But for me, it just never really releases or goes anywhere. And
yeah,
the chorus is good in a lot of ways, but the verses are like pretty pedestrian and don't keep the song flowing and interesting enough for me to really merit coming back to it, I guess.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that it wasn't one of the more memorable ones for me. I do think that middle section reminds me a lot of, like I was saying earlier, Tim Burton, Danny Elfman, who does a lot of the scores for Tim Burton films, has that effect to it. It gets very almost operatic and grandiose in that middle part. So I really enjoyed that aspect. That's my favorite part of the song. But other than that, what stuck out to me the most was just the lyrics. This is a really deeply sad song. This is somebody who wants to be well, but knows it really isn't an option for him. You know, lyrics like, I came too far to end up this way, feeling like there's no way. Just having that battle of like, I don't want to be this way, but I know, feeling like he's doomed to being that way. It's just really, really sad. So I think lyrically it's gripping in that way, but otherwise for me, it fell flat as well. I will say that the, like you said, the intro is super dope. They have very strong intros in this album overall. I think that's a real strength, and everyone sounds unique and special, even on songs that we maybe don't enjoy as much as others. There's still something to remember about them, which is really special. But overall, I would tend to agree with you that this song wasn't in my top or even my mid ranking. It was definitely lower for me.
I think there's a certain hypnotic quality to it that I appreciate. I think it maintains a vibe the whole time through. And it, you can, you know, obviously that third verse is different in how the vocals are performed, but I mean, obviously it was building to that. I think it's more memorable. Nope. I take that back. I think I agree with Michael in that Wake Up and No Way are of the more forgettable for different reasons. I think Wake Up has a slightly better, at least the Wake the Fuck Up part is better. I don't know. There should have been a way to combine these songs because there's really good elements in both.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, to say it's like, I mean, let's be clear. I mean, this, like so many of these songs on this album are amazing. Like, just because there's a bad song on this album doesn't mean it's not actually like a good song, right? It's still a, like, I think it's still,
it's
a
just
good
not
song.
As memorable.
It's just kind of like, you know, like there's a lot of songs on this album in, you know,
I would still listen to it. Like I wouldn't skip it. You know, if I was listening to the album while working out, it's not like I'd skip it or something, but I mean, obviously there was ones you're going to preference. Here's No Way.
Yeah.
So Let's Get This Party Started is a song that immediately for me, Ty has a different answer to this. And I feel bad for you guys. You won't get to hear the songs that were sung between the tracks that we're talking about. But the song for me that came into my head was Let's Get It Started by the Black Eyed Peas. And I could not get that song out of my head. Let's get it started. Ha! Like, literally, I could not stop singing that song. And did you know that that song used to say, Let's Get Retarded?
Indeed. Oh, yeah. I own the album that
before they changed it. Ella Funk?
Yep. I think.
Great. Such a good album. I had no idea that that was. Anyway, yeah. I went on a weird rabbit trail, a Black Eyed Peas rabbit trail. Which is, I don't know, fitting for, you know, the Linkin Park side of nu metal, I guess, with hip hop. Anyway, I digress. This song is not one of my favorites, but there are some really cool aspects to this song. The "You Make Me Feel Insane" screaming part is so cool. And that same part of the song sort of sounds like it belongs like Jack from The Nightmare Before Christmas would be singing it. It has that very eerie cartoon kind of weird vibe about it, like very niche cult film type musical or something. I just kept getting vibes of that throughout this album, but especially on this song. I think it's hysterical that a song titled Let's Get This Party Started has the first lyric, "The man is crying." That just really cracked me up.
Yeah, let's get the party started.
Yeah. And, oh, okay. It's my party.
You guys don't cry? Yeah, you guys don't cry to get a party started?
It's literally just so funny. Like, it's not what you expect to happen.
I just really love you guys. I'm so glad you're here.
What kind of parties do you throw, Ty? Anyway, it's a great opening line. It just really made me laugh. I just kept rewinding and laughing. Also, like, a few notes of that beginning intro on the guitar, I was like, am I literally listening to the Diary of Jane by Breaking Benjamin? Like, it has that, like, first few similar notes. And I was like, oh,
that's
did I
true.
Go to the...
That is true.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I literally, like, and then it goes minor, and you're like, okay, no, I didn't. But I truly thought I was listening to Breaking Benjamin.
It's very close, and, yeah. I mean, it would be Korn that inspired them. But, yeah.
Yeah. Go me. It literally just made me, like, took me out, and then I had to listen to that song because it's a jam. The vocal effect on the verses reminds me of a band called She Wants Revenge. I don't know if you guys ever listened to them. They have a popular song called Tear You Apart, but it's just that sort of, like, melodic, subdued kind of talking singing that I feel like was... I have a lot of songs that I used to listen to that sort of sounded like that. The white noise record scratch that blends from No Way into this is so cool. The seamless transition between them is really good. And that's just another example of how well they combine these songs on albums, even ones that aren't interludes. They just work so well together, even though the song sounds so unique. And they make such specific artistic musical decisions. They, instead of going to a major chord, they're going to go to a minor. Instead of resolving a chord, they'll go dissonant. They always give you something that you don't expect. They are fully unique in their artistic choices. They are probably going to do something you don't expect them to do, which I really appreciate from a listener standpoint, especially in an album of 16 songs where if they were doing the same stuff over and over again, it could get really repetitive with that many songs. But they always give you something new and interesting, and it just doesn't get old to listen to how they come up with something new, you know? So this was a song that had lots of things I appreciated about it. It wasn't one that I found myself listening to a lot, going back through and picking out my favorites, but there were certain aspects of it that I felt were super, super strong.
Yeah, for me, in a rare moment on this album, I think that the chorus is the weakest link to this song. I kind of agree with you, Danielle. It's like, it feels a little mediocre, little run of the mill for this album.
Yeah.
And But the way it opens and the delivery of the verse lyrics has this really cool sort of at times like offbeat sort of cadence. I guess the cadence of the verse deliveries is really, really, really cool. And then they kind of build a little bit into the pre-chorus, and then the chorus just kind of feels like it's really aggressive, and it in a different song might work better, but for me in this song, like, I honestly would have preferred if they would have just played like more subdued the whole time. I guess the whole concept of getting the party started wouldn't really work if you didn't have like an intense chorus, but part of me is just a little bummed that like the verses in this song are stellar, like with this clean guitar, this like kind of this eerie, spooky, clean guitar chord notes just kind of being plucked individually, and then there's a bass line going off in the background with like a simple drum beat. There's a really a lot to dig into in the verses, but yeah, for me the chorus just kind of like sucks it away a little bit, which is a little disappointing, because I think those verses are very, very good. I was having a hard time like reading the lyrics. Like I'm definitely not like a lyrics analyst, and I was having a hard time understanding like what the song is about. I assume it has something to do with like, you know, the narrator is like depressed and he can't get out of this rut that he keeps falling into. So he maybe falls back to drugs to make himself feel sane. Is that what getting the party started is? I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Ty, what do you think?
I mean, I think that I don't have a fucking idea what it's about. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I this was a hard one for me to figure out, guys. So I don't claim to be a lyrical analyst either. So, again, another, this is a middle of the road one for me too. Which, you know, it's going to happen when you got 16 songs on the album. I think that despite all that, like I said, I still am very, think this is a very great album, and clearly they were taking a chance with a lot of this stuff. So, that being said, well, let's have you listen to it.
The next track, track number 14, is Wish You Could Be Me. It's another interlude. Maybe the weirdest one. Maybe this might be the weirdest one on the entire album, which is saying a lot. There's some like really strange interludes that happen on the song. I don't have a ton to say about this, except for I think like instrumentally it sounds really cool. I don't know what sort of instruments or like physical objects they're using to like create this like weird boingy boing like sound. It sounds like they're like they've got like a taut wire and they're like hitting it with another like metal device to make that this weird boing. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah.
I thought that was cool. No idea what's going on in this song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Zero idea about anything in Wish You Could Be Me. It's really strange. Have you any thoughts on it?
I think it's interesting. I like the rapping. That's really tight. And certainly a change of pace. I agree that there's an argument to be made that this is probably the weirdest interlude, but it's certainly not my least favorite interlude. This is one of my favorite ones, actually. It's just, it certainly takes you for a trip. I feel like for me, and you guys can tell me what you think about this, Ty, I wonder if you're going to agree with me here, but lyrically, I felt like maybe this song was about like label executives or a band manager or something where it's like you have the power, but you wish you could be in the limelight, but you're basically the puppet master and I'm the puppet. And what do you think?
That does make a lot of sense considering the next song is Counting.
Right.
And as it follows up, like that, those are definitely the vibes I'm getting off of Counting, is like all of these label bigwigs are just counting all the money.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So
I think that's exactly what it's about. Although I didn't really care until you guys started, you know, analyzing the lyrics, because I just think this is my favorite interlude. I just think this is very fun and catchy. And I didn't really care what the lyrics were. I was just like, this is just fun. I enjoy his rap here. I enjoy the silliness of it and the fuck you of it all. Which makes sense if he's talking about, you know, people who really don't get it, like, you know,
right.
record execs. So that's all I got. I think that's what it's about. Absolutely.
Cool. Glad we're on the same page. That's all I've got about that one.
So the follow-up to Wish You Could Be Me, that short interlude, is called Counting. And this song starts off with this clean, basically the main riff, this really massive main riff, being played clean. And again, I don't think we've seen that as like an intro. Like, it's a very simple intro. Like, lots of bands do that sort of stuff. But I think this is the first time we've actually heard it on this album, just like a clean version of the song, of the main riff as they go through, which is cool. Just kind of goes to show how unique all of their songs have been so far, especially in their intros.
Yeah.
But this song most certainly does not have a subdued riff like a lot of the other songs have. I mean, that seems to be part of Korn's formula, is subdued verses that build into a bridge, and then they kind of explode into this wide open chorus. This song it's a pretty high, it's not a high tempo song, but it's definitely not like a slow song. It moves along at a pretty decent pace, and like the timing and cadence of the verses I find really, really interesting. I think this is a really listenable song. It is fairly like simple in nature. I don't think there's a ton of like interesting instrumentation that's happening, but I think this is a really strong song in terms of Davis's delivery. Because of his, I guess the verses are mostly like, they're kind of like growled and sang. But then the choruses are very, very open with like wide open guitar chords with, Davis just singing over the top of them. And like we were talking about with Wish You Could Be Me, being about like these, you know, maybe like money grabbing record execs, Counting is most certainly about that. I think there's some lyrics in the bridge that go, it's funny how it gets started. They get their money grubbing fingers on you. They get your money and the girls and the fame. I only do it for the fun. For the games, my game. I don't know. That's my game, I think. But anyway, so it's a really interesting song and kind of surprising in context as far as like lyrics are concerned. About the rest of the album is very like personal and about like emotional issues and drug issues. But this is kind of like a I don't know. I guess a fuck you to the people that are out there trying to steal and like steal the band's limelight and kind mm-hmm. of ride their coattails to success.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting in that way. It's yeah. definitely like unique subject matter for the band. Overall, I actually like enjoyed the song. The more I listened to it, I think it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
In nature. I don't think it doesn't have like a ton of unique aspects to it. It seems like it just kind of knows what it's doing and what it does, and
right.
it just kind of does it, and then the song ends. But it's good.
Yeah.
It's good, and I think Davis's delivery is very top notch in this one.
Yeah. I think it's a good pathway to the last song that has a lot going for it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this song's pretty tight, but we're just kind of paving the road for like this super dope masterpiece thing that's coming your way, you know? I think you said it well. I thought this song for a long time was about drugs. I thought it was about like using drugs, and I only do it for the fun and things like that. I thought this had to do with drug use. I didn't think, which is so funny because I was so sure about the last song that it had to do with like label execs, and I didn't carry over at all into counting, which is so funny. But I think we put both of the pieces of the puzzle together for us, and now it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I totally see that, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was like, what does he mean by that's my game? I'm confused if it has to do with drugs, but it makes much more sense in the other context. I think the song drives really hard. It's super groovy. It's a pretty, it has an intensity to it, but I think you're right, Michael. It's not trying to be this crazy, fast, insane song. It knows what it's supposed to be doing. It knows the role that it plays, I think. And, I do think it vocally, this is a vocal delivery that we haven't had this far in the album. It's not quite his yell singing. It's certainly not his high-pitched screaming singing. Mm-hmm. It's not that other type of singing where he's more straight tone. This is like a different timbre altogether. This is like a totally, I almost was like, which vocalist is this? Who is this singing? Because it sounds like a different person.
Yeah, it's pretty clean, but there's like just a touch of, like grit on it.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like any other song on the album, which is so interesting that he just, you know, I think he probably just walked in the studio and was like, just sang it or whatever. But for me, I'm like, why does this sound like different than any other song on this album? So it's cool that he does that. But I think it's a pretty cool song. And it leads really nicely into the next song. And it certainly has that, like I've said a million times before thus far, Tim Burton musical vibe, that grandiose nature to it, which a lot of songs on this album have, which I really appreciate about this album in general. But yeah, that's Counting. Okay, I have the great privilege of starting the discourse on Dirty. This song is a true masterpiece. This is my second favorite song on the album after Dead, which I know everybody is like, girl, Dead does not even count. But for me, it does. it is such a great song. I'm talking about Dirty, but Dead as well. it is, oh gosh, where can I even begin? This song is so tight. There's the snare opening is just really tight and fun. One of my favorite aspects about this song is that the first few lines of the track are vocally driven, and the vocals begin to weave the melody before the instruments ever come in. And then instruments sort of start to build in little by little. That is so, I love that this song is vocally driven in that way. And the vocalist just like takes the show out the gate. That is so fun. And they set the tone for the rest of the song. This is a prime example of a band that is meticulous, melodic, and in a lot of ways, minor chord driven. There's lots of minors in general on this album, which are like just the most beautiful chords in the world to listen to. This song is, I think, a prime example of how experimental this band is, the experimentation they put, the unique quality that they have to all their songs that are just so fully this band that no other band could sing or perform or write the way that they do. It's so unique and special. Sometimes, especially in this song, they have certain chords and structures that remind me a little bit of Muse. And I don't know why I got some Muse references, but I was like, wow, some of this stuff reminds me of Muse a little bit. So anyway, that's just a little aside. Has one of my favorite choruses on the album. This chorus slaps. In general, their choruses are pretty strong. Me and Michael have talked about this ad nauseum at this point, but a really strong chorus yet again, and a great way to end the album. And am I wrong? Or does this song also belong in the Matrix? Because I'm like, why do all these songs belong in the Matrix? I guess it's just that vibe, you know? But I'm like, I can see this during a fight scene when he's like learning like Kung Fu with, anyway.
I know
this
Kung Fu.
Is, yeah, it's, oh my gosh, I want to watch a Matrix now. It just slays. It's this track slays, that there's no getting around it. It is such a tight song. I would love to talk about if we think there's any significance to the 3 minutes of static, that 3+ minutes of static that we get, if it's just like a palate cleanser, if we think there's any significance to it. I don't know what you guys think about that.
That just seems like a very,
like, corn, artistic
corn
flair
thing to do. Yeah, just like, I don't know. I didn't really look into too deep into that. Like,
that's
the,
cool.
The 3 minutes of 4 minutes of static.
I figured that.
Yeah.
Well, so what do you think about this one?
Yeah, for me, it really kind of harkens back to the final track on their debut album called Daddy. Just in its kind of eeriness, not necessarily, like, obviously the ending of Daddy is like more or less like earth shattering in terms of its like emotional explosion, but this has that too, right? At the very end, you know, he's talking about you know, he basically just says over and over again, you dirty little boy. And
mm-hmm.
You pretty much hit all of the notes that I wanted to hit regarding the song. I think the chorus again is, it feels
superb.
Like at this point, at this point in the album, it's been a little while since we've had like a really great chorus, or at least the really excellent chorus density has reduced.
Right. Right.
So it's really nice that we get this at the end of the song. And again, we are graced with a subdued verse. And it really, really works because, like, yeah, like you were saying, it's really vocally driven in the song, which is something that we haven't seen yet.
Right.
From this album. It's just like, there's new stuff that keeps getting thrown at us. And,
yeah,
I think this is a great way to end the album. I think it's a very excellent album closer. I don't, like, as a song, it's definitely not one of my favorites on the album. I think it is a good song. It's probably just like,
yeah,
like, I don't know. It would be like really high in the middle of the pack for me, as a song. I think just simply because I appreciate what it does on the album, but
yeah,
I wouldn't go just listen to this song, I don't think.
Interesting.
You
okay.
Know what I mean? But I was trying to look through, like, I have no idea what the hell this song is about. And the only reason why I talked about like Daddy was in that song, in their debut album, there was a lot of I think Jonathan Davis was abused as a child. Not by his father, but I'm wondering if that has something to do with this song, if it's the references, "You Dirty Little Boy," seems pretty like that would be pretty spot on to some sort of childhood abuse. I have no idea.
Who knows?
That seems like it would be appropriate. But beyond that, I find the song kind of vague.
Not
in
topping
nature.
Your ranking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that too. But like in terms of like lyrical content, it seems like there's obviously something there, but it just feels a little vague at times.
Yeah. I forgot to mention this earlier, but that part, that verse two part, when they strip down the instruments and he goes into that three part harmony, I got like straight up, I thought like he sounded so much like Freddie Mercury.
Wow.
Like I got such strong Freddie Mercury vibes, like the tight harmonies, the layered harmonies, the straight vocal, the way that his vowels landed. I was like, Freddie Mercury is among us, which I feel like is a really big compliment. That was a little note I forgot to add, but I'm really surprised it's not higher for you. And I don't know why. I think I just expected that this would be like this. What's that song on Rising? That was like, we were like, this is the one. Was it Stargazer?
Mm. Yeah.
That yes. we were yeah. like, this is the masterpiece. And it was like at the end. So it like led up to it. I was like, oh, everybody's going to agree that this was the masterpiece of the album, but I'm surprised. I can see why. I think there are other songs I think that just appeal to you more. Also, this song is confusing lyrically. I honestly don't know what it's about either. I never have. And I think it's just one that I just decided I was going to not understand. And I just stopped trying. You know, I was like, okay, whatever. He's saying something here clearly, but I don't know what it is and I can't tap into it.
I definitely think it stems from his child abuse. I think that's where it's coming from. I think as a whole, when you listen to this album start to finish, I think this is definitely the way that I would end the album. This is a great album closer.
Okay. Yeah.
But like Michael said, I'm not going to go listen to this one on its own. I'm going to listen to Somebody, Someone, Falling Away From Me, Trash, Make Me Bad, Hey Daddy. I'm going to go listen to those. So yeah, in this case, I think it was masterful in its placement on the album. I think it was the perfect song to close the album with. But I think the masterpiece of this album is, you know, it might just be the lead single or, you know, Falling Away From Me, or it may be, you know, depending who you talk to, Trash or Make Me Bad or Somebody, Someone. I mean, it's weird to call them. I mean, I guess, yeah, technically they were some of the singles, but they're also some of the best songs.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
that's why they're singles, right?
As far as the static is concerned, I don't know if we're to interpret that as he is, you know, just an artistic choice, something that Korn would do, or if we're supposed to interpret that he killed himself, that he blew his head off, you know, and then therefore there's nothing else.
That's what he's left with. Yeah,
that's what he's left is static, or is that him? I don't know. Tuning out this chapter of his life. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I think it's deserving of praise. I just think that I agree with Michael that I would never seek this one out on its own.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So. Yeah.
Guys, we've rambled and ranted and raved about this album. So we got to know what percentage Danielle's going to give it. 0%. You can't really have 0%. Can you, Michael? Zero.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Okay. There might be a zero somewhere is what he's saying.
So zero is absolute dog shit. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And 100% is like pure gold. This is our eighth album, so I'm not going to like read them all off. But Master of Puppets is the number one song so far with an 88%. And Rain and Blood is the last place album with a 30%. So what do you give this one?
Guys, I want you to put some bells or something in this because this album for me gets a 90%.
Wow.
We're finally in the A's, y'all. I don't know if we're ever going to come back here again, but this album was really that good. It was a fantastic masterpiece, artful ride. And I enjoyed every second of listening to it for the past week. Literally every second.
What would you give it? Before we react to that, I need to know.
What would I give Issues by Korn?
Yeah.
An 86.
And then just for reference, what would you give Master of Puppets?
96.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, reacting to that, Danielle, I'm very surprised. I thought you would rate it somewhere in a 70%.
Yeah.
70 same. Percentile. Was not expecting a 90% on this. I guess being a nu metal album, although they, Korn would, you know, they'd be upset at me for calling it that, but like they get lumped into nu metal. So being a Korn album and having all these elements they bring to the table, I guess I'm not totally surprised, but like,
yeah.
I just like hands down view Master of Puppets as a masterful piece of work that I would give a 96 to 100% every right. day of the week. So it's hard to wrap my mind around that, I guess, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually went back and forth on that because I'm like, which is why, you know, I was talking to Ty about this before and was like, I almost wish we could have different ranking systems now of like, here's what, like the genres, like the subgenres have their own ranking. Because for me, Master of Puppets was the standard. And with the albums and the bands of that time that we listened to that were around the same period, there is no competition. I think Korn just offered something different for me that Metallica couldn't bring to the table, which was all these different newer and more experimental mm-hmm. things in their sound that are nostalgic nods for me, because this was an album that came out in the 90s that I felt like I connected with in a way. It reminded me of a lot of movies that are really important to me and sparked a lot of familiar images in my head and memories. And I think also I like, for me in my mind, now like that you guys have explained what nu metal is and how it can have hip-hop influences or influences of other genres, if there is any chance of an album scoring really well, I think for me it probably would have been nu metal, because it would have had all these different other, bringing all these other things to the table that might be something I'm more familiar with, because I'm not a metalhead. I don't listen to metal typically, if that makes any sense, of mm-hmm. like things that might be more memorable or I might recognize more. But yeah, all that said, I had like a guilt a day where I was like, am I going to let this top Master of Puppets? I think they just offer different things for me and they appeal to different pieces of what I like about the metal albums we've listened to so far. They just appeal to me in different ways, if that makes sense. I think this one has an edge in that it's something that I can relate to more because it came out in my lifetime and there's things I recognize. But Master of Puppets is a masterpiece that I don't think we'll ever hear the likes of that album again, you know?
I'd also say it's timeless. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't know. It's a timelessly, yeah. Always ranked as one of the one or two best metal albums of all time. But I mean, I'm a little, I have mixed emotions, but I think that's a good thing overall. I think people will hopefully debate about this, because I'm sure people are already like, this is blasphemy. Peace sells, but who's buying? Just so you guys know, that's in third place with 84%. Michael, do you have anything else to add with this shocking rise in the power rankings by Korn?
It makes sense. I think this is the of all of the, you know, according to a non-metalhead, this is the, you know, quote, you know, least metal album.
Yes.
Terms of its like metal purity, I guess that we have listened to.
So absolutely,
like all of those other influences, kind of being in and kind of reducing the pure metal aspects makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of other influences going on, so it's reasonable.
Yeah. It's tough because I really love Korn, but this hurts me a little bit. But you know, you go on, you move on with your life.
Oh my gosh.
I think next time, guys, we're going to – Slipknot comes to mind. I think we're probably going to listen to Slipknot next.
Nice.
So likely Slipknot. And then after we get over Slipknot, going to, I think, take an extended time in metalcore, because metalcore is where Michael and I grew up with, and there's a lot of albums that we're going to stick there probably just as long as we sticked in the 80s with thrash. You know, we did Rain in Blood, Peace Sells, and Master of Puppets. And I can anticipate when we get to metalcore, we're going to do some of the most iconic metalcore albums of that era. So I think
things are going to get interesting.
And I think, yeah, things will get very interesting. And I think metalcore, of course, that movement and the new wave of American heavy metal, that's more like pure metal. Or there's more purity of metal to it, I guess you could say, with, of course, the modern influences. That's why I always say that I think nu metal and Korn is its own thing, and the new wave of American heavy metal is after that, when people were getting sick of like the nu metal thing. So that's personally how I view it. But yeah, guys, I guess we got a new number one, Korn's Issues. I mean, crazy times that we live in.
The king is dead. Long live the king.
Yeah. Long live the king.
I'm sorry, Ty.
So I guess we'll just
cause a rift.
I guess we'll just stop doing this now. This will probably be our last one. So does that make me bad? I don't know. It make me sad. It make me sad.
I'm going to hear about this for days, man.
So, well, no, I mean, I really like Korn, and it, you know, Korn is a metal band. I will say that.
Yeah.
Just like Michael said, though, the purity of that metal, they're a hard band to pin down. Put it that way. But they are metal. All right, guys. Supermetalworld.com is where you can listen to the rest of our stuff. We are on all social media. Anywhere that you stream a podcast, you can listen to us there. Rate and review. Share with a friend. Do all those great things. Rest in peace, Master of Puppets. Horns high to y'all.
Horns high.